0818-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveland. 51551 is our text. You would have read the story this morning in the Irish Independent, Senna Maloney, about this NCT test, that when you go looking for your NCT test, you get directed in some cases to a British company, not doing anything illegal, as is pointed out in the article, but they say they are a broker offering slots for the NCT test. Well, actually, they're not. They're just in there in the middle. It's happened with visas to the United States, the ESTA. And what I didn't know, and I think a lot of people should be aware, because given the demand for Irish passports, that you can be diverted as well when you're looking to renew your Irish passport. Richard Hart. Richard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened?
Well, 3 weeks ago, I decided I want to renew my passport.
Yeah.
And I went in the line and just Googled renew my passport.
Okay.
So I went down the usual Google things and it says, renew your passport. And I clicked on it.
Yeah.
And it took me to all the... you know, fill in your name, address, everything. You fill in your details.
Yeah.
And I did it and uploaded my photograph, the whole lot. And it said, your application has been submitted to the Irish Passport Office.
Okay.
And we'll be in touch with you. So a week after, I got an email back that the photograph was being rejected. Could I send another one? So I did it.
Yeah.
And a week after, I got my passport. And when I looked up my bank statement, they charged me 128 euros.
Ah.
And I, like, on the passport, it says 75 euros.
That's right.
You know, I'm an old age pensioner. I'm 75. You know, but like, when I rang the Irish Passport Office,
they
said, no, we've issued your passport to you, but it went through a third party.
Hmm.
And I said, I didn't want it to go through a tour party. I went through your office. They said, no, you didn't. No, you're directed to another tour party. So I won't mention the name, but that's who it's directed to. So I asked the person I was speaking in the Irish party, I said, can you not do anything about that? And they said, no, we can't. We have a notice on the end of our website to avoid tour party applications. So that's about it. I'm out 50 euros, you know, for a passport. I should have paid 75 for, you know.
And when did you hand over the money, Richard?
On my application. It just says enter your card details.
Okay. And was 128 anywhere to be seen?
No.
So you just presumed, because most people know that the Irish passport is 75 euro, you just presumed that's what you're going to be paid, and you gave them your details, and then when your accounts came in, there was the 128 gone.
That's exactly.
Now, have you any way of contacting that third party group?
I tried to go online and get in touch with them. I had no way of getting in touch with them. They seem to have just vanished off the internet, you know.
But you see, the bizarre...
Several people I know have tried to get in touch with them now, you know.
See, the bizarre thing is that they're a legitimate company, and I think the passport office in Dublin say the same. The reason they can't... they can't ban them as they're not doing anything illegal, but they are claiming to be able to help you. What was the phrase? Submit your passport application. Wasn't that the phrase?
We have submitted your passport application.
Yeah.
But I thought that was the Irish passport telling me
I know. And that's, and that's what they did. They did submit your passport application.
Yeah.
They just sent it on, and then you invariably get it back. You usually get it back much quicker because I renewed my passport recently I got it within 24 hours. But I had to submit it, I had to sit for the photograph about 20 times to get the right expression. So they submit your photograph, then they get the photograph, gets rejected, they come back to you saying, give us another photograph.
Yeah.
And then they take the extra Well, what do you say, 53 quid?
50 euros, yeah, sure. Roughly for doing, 50,
for doing nothing.
75 from 100.
For forwarding your email.
It's something I could have done myself, you know.
Okay. By the way, did you? Where is the warning on the DFA website?
Is it? I didn't look at it, but
it's a front and centre. Okay.
Yeah. I was told it was on the website to be aware of third party.
And they do say, please, when you're applying for your passport, go to DFA, which is Department of Foreign Affairs, .ie/passports. Now, I presume there's a facility for people who don't have, which is still a significant amount of the population who don't have access, one, to credit cards and two, to computers. I know people find that hard to believe, but it is true, just as there's a significant proportion of the country that don't have cars. And we are everyone.
I did it off my phone.
Yeah, but good, like, man, great.
When I put into Google and it came up like the Irish passport, I took it that's what I want. I didn't know you went to the Department of Foreign Affairs.
Well, I'm looking at it now, Richard. Fair play to you, because it's the first thing that now flashes up in red. Well done. Yeah. In the Department of Foreign Affairs, alert. We're aware. I suspect, thanks to you, we're aware of a third-party website that, in return for a fee, are purporting to assist passport applicants with their online passport application. And they say you make your online passport application through, and it's a very, I know I'm saying not everyone has a laptop, but it's the DFA and the passport office deserve an award for how simple and straightforward they've made their website. Because it is very clear, but it is that's what you pay your 75 euro for, so steer clear of. Now, do you see if they've gone, which they might have just folded for whatever reason, they're legitimate, they'll turn up again in a different, with a different name.
Maybe they'd have gone when they've seen that notice on the website, you know.
But people would still be, the notorious one, and it's still going on, is the visa for the United States of America called the ESTA. You apply for it here, and if you put in ESTA, you invariably get a third party who charge you much more than the American embassy do here in Dublin, the very helpful American embassy do. And they basically take the extra money. And all they're doing, Richard, is forwarding an email.
That's something you can do yourself.
Okay. Where are you're renewing your passport. Did you have to pay the 75 quid? Is there a reduction for different age groups?
There's no reduction for pensioners.
No. Oh, is there not? No.
I asked them that.
Oh, did you? Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. Are you a pensioner?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And where are you hoping to travel to again?
I'm hoping to go to Spain next month. Well, I am going to Spain next month, you know.
When the weather drops, when the temperature drops to below 40.
Yeah.
Okay. well spotted, Richard, and it's great to warn people. Please, you apply for your passport online, and you apply for your passport online, go directly into the Department of Foreign Affairs, and they state clearly what the amount of the fee is, 75 quid. Try to avoid, and they're out there, and not just in this, in the NCT.
You're saying, George, they're not doing anything illegal.
Well, apparently they're not. Because I think you, in fairness, Richard, you hit on the word which got them out of jail, so to speak, and that is, we will submit your passport application.
Yeah.
They're not saying we will process it, which is what the passport office do. They're saying we would submit, but well spotted. I'm sorry, the 53 quid, which will get you a meal for two and two bottles of wine and a glass of sangria and a pint of Guinness. A cold pint of Guinness, hopefully, in Spain. Okay, Richard, good to meet you.
Okay,
that's
thanks a lot.
That's Richard. Joe at RT.ie. I mentioned during my conversation with Louise about an hour ago, that a listener in North Strand in Dublin contacted us and said she was surprised when there was a knock on her door this morning, quite early, and there was two members of the Mormon church standing, you know, in the white shirt and the the tie, very freshly turned out, short hair, and they had under their arm, they had the Bible, I presume it's the Book of Mormon, and she just wanted to, she was addled. Now, she wasn't frightened, just yet she's surprised that the that Mormons are still going door to door in Ireland. And what do you do? What is the civil way of dealing with people? Now, Ben O'Farrell is, Ben, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
Good, Ben. Are you, you're a member of the Mormon Church?
I have been my whole life. My parents joined in the 60s.
Okay, well, I should really refer to it as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Isn't that the correct?
Appreciate that, yeah. Yeah, the Mormon is just a nickname.
Yeah, it's a nickname,
the
I'm sorry.
Christ is the proper yeah, very good.
Apologies. Now, Ben, do you still, do members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints still go door to door?
So the local member congregations, so people in their sort of 30s, 40s, 50s or whatever, none of them go door to door locally in their own community.
Okay.
But we have a young missionary force, which are young men between the ages of usually 18 and 22, and young girls between 19 and 21. And they go on a mission, but they're usually always in a foreign country. So some young people from England come to Ireland, some people from Ireland go to America. So the people knocking on the door most likely weren't from Ireland.
Okay.
They're here on a mission for 2 years, and there's about 70,000 of them all over the world still knocking door to doors. And I, as I said to your producer, primarily now, rather than door-to-door knocking, a lot of the missionaries use social media to make contact with people and see if they have an interest in the church. That's the bigger thing in the last, say, 5 years, especially during COVID.
So the two, they're invariably lads, they're invariably men, aren't they?
So it used to be like 90% men, and occasionally there was two young ladies that would go. But in the last couple of years, the numbers of young women going on a mission has increased dramatically. So it's probably 60-40 now. So if there was 100 of them in Ireland, 40 of them would be young women going around, and 6 of them would be young
Men. Apparently the two members of your church who were going around the North Strand, I just think it's very, nothing to do, the whole thing of doing the slog, the door-to-door slog in this day and age. But they were two men. They were two young men. Do you know where they were from?
So I wouldn't know where they're from exactly now. I could log on to my little church account and see who's in the area. They would have covered, they would be in our parish, our ward, we call it. That is actually opposite Glasnevin Cemetery, what's also called the Fingus Ward.
Okay.
And they would cover half of North Dublin. So they'd have a big old area to go through. There'd be another two out in Clonsilla would cover the other half of North Dublin. And then there'd be six missionaries on the south side of the sea.
And when the two lads this morning, and by the way, they are quite, in the world we live in, they are quite identifiable, aren't they, Ben? The book they had under their arm, this listener referred to, is that the Book of Mormon or the Bible?
So we read from both. So
okay.
We read the King James Version of the Bible, so both the New and the Old Testament.
Okay.
That would be it.
And what do they say? What would they have been saying to the people of North Strand this morning when the door opened?
Lots of people, that's the first question they ask you is, what's the difference with your religion? So it's a Christian religion, hence the name, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But it's a restored church that's only been restored in the last, say, 200 years, as opposed to most Christian churches would have been around, some thousands of years. So they're basically saying that the gospel of Jesus Christ that Jesus set up in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago has been restored to the earth with a prophet who speaks to God and communicates to the people, with baptism by immersion and with temples. And all the things that existed in Christ's time are restored in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, what reaction? I'm thinking especially, Ben, of the most recent census, which saw a big drop in the number of people who said they were members of the Catholic Church, and generally a big drop in religious interest. We're still quite a religious country, but it's quite different than what it was 50 years ago. What reaction do the two lads get when they knock on doors and people open and they see these two strangers?
I would have been, there was a time some years ago, I served as a local leader of the church here, what's called a stake president, and the leaders of the church would ask us, how is the reception of the church in Ireland? Especially given some of the issues that happened with different religions in Ireland, the bad publicity that provided for churches. And they said, are people shown any more of an interest in our faith because they're maybe a little bit disillusioned with their own faith? But unfortunately, they become disillusioned with religion, not just with a church, but they're not really interested in religion at all because of these things that have happened. So we certainly didn't see any upsurge in people having an interest in our faith because they become a little bit unhappy with certain things in other faiths. But
you see, I remember growing up, the attitude to the members of the church, Latter-day Saints coming, Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints coming to your door, was one, you would never be uncivil. People would be
it's
civil.
Very important, and I did it myself as a young man for 2 years, and they would constantly teach you, you always have to leave a good impression at the door. Do not ever offend anyone. Do not force your way in. Do not be rude. You know, there's no good to come from that. You go to the door, you tell them what you're there for, you ask them would they have an interest in listening to a lesson, and if they don't, you apologise for disturbing them, and you move on to the next person.
But what percentage, Ben, would bring you over the threshold?
Yeah, in my time, it was 1,000 contacts a day or a week or whatever, as long as it took you to make 1,000 different contacts before one person would show an interest and say, yeah, I'll listen to you. Sometimes just on the doorstep for 10 minutes, sometimes they might invite you in.
Are you saying there's 1,000 to 1 chance you'll be invited in?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you keep going, Ben?
Yeah, it is quite disheartening sometimes. I served my mission for the church in England and Wales, and as an Irishman, I was actually very well received over there, I have to say. But it was quite difficult. It was occasionally you could go a whole entire day knocking on doors for 8 or 9 hours, and not one single person would have an interest in talking to you. So that can be a little bit disheartening. But like I said, now they're using social media and other outlets to find people that might have an interest in. They make contact with people online, and then the person communicates. With COVID, they were doing that over Zoom and whatever.
Okay, say there, Ben, because listeners want to make a number of points, and we try and improve that line after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Talking about a listener living in North Strand in Dublin this morning was surprised, and that's the word she used. It's not, she wasn't upset, but she was surprised to get a knock on her door, and there was 2 young men there in white shirts, black ties, they had a little name badge on them, and black trousers, and with the Bible and the St. James Bible. And what else is under their arm, Ben?
They probably had the Book of Mormon with them as well.
And the Book of Mormon. And she just said she didn't know how to react. And how do people react in this day and age? Would you ever get negative stuff, Ben?
Unfortunately, I've been chased away from the door a couple of times. People coming out quite angry. They may have had a bad experience or had a bad day or whatever, but it's not very common. The majority of the time, people are quite polite. They'll say, listen, I'm not really interested. I'm busy right now. And that's the end of the conversation.
Okay. Another caller wants to know, she saw the badge, but it said Elder Smith or Elder Brown, but does it give their first names?
Doesn't give their first name. No, okay. Just when they get called to serve a mission, if I went, say, as Ben O'Farrell, I would on my mission for the 2 years, I would be Elder O'Farrell.
Okay.
Now, if you ask them for it, they would probably tell it to you. It's not a big secret per se, but the title is a mission.
And someone else said, I invited them in for a cup of tea, but they don't drink tea. Is that true?
Indeed, yeah. So there's a health code in the church that we've had since its inception almost 200 years ago, where it was felt that certain things of the day, tobacco and tea and coffee and alcohol, are not good for the body. And so for health reasons, to help us to live as long as we can, we don't participate in any of those things.
Okay. By the way, our WhatsApp number is 087-184-3709, 184-3709, with the 087 prefix 51551 text. Betty, you had an encounter with two young members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which most people refer to as Mormons. How did you find them, Betty?
Absolutely wonderful, Joe. That was in the 1960s when all my children were. They came one evening and knocked on the door. There were 2 lads from America, and very, very smartly dressed, very polite.
Still are,
and I, of course, me being a Christian Catholic myself, from a child born at 4 days old, I invited them in.
Okay.
We had a chat, and I got on wonderfully well with them, and I thought, that we would do the same. I mean,
and did you ask questions, Betty?
Well, yes, I asked them what they believed, and they believed in Jesus Christ. I know all the thing about they don't do this and they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's me in my eyes, as in the eyes of the Lord, who's right and who's wrong. But the fact of the matter was, Joe, they did say to me, you know, we were talking about Jesus dying and rising again.
Mm-hmm.
And they said to me, do you know what happened to him in between the dying and the rising? And I said, well, yes, I said, he just died and he rose up on Easter Sunday. And then they said, no, but do you know what he did between Good Friday and Easter Sunday? I said, no, you tell me. I said, I know he descended to the dead, but I'd never really taken it on board, you know. And they said, no, he went down in between Good Friday and Easter Sunday morning. Jesus descended to the imprisoned spirits who had died, who didn't know him before Jesus came on the earth 2,000 years ago. And he went and preached to the imprisoned spirits and set them free. How about that?
Okay.
And I was delighted.
Were you tempted, Betty?
Tempted to what?
To join. That's what they're trying to get people to join. Why not?
No, the heart of our faith is Jesus Christ as Lord, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So there's nothing can shake my faith, Joe.
So what is the difference in your understanding of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints?
All I know, they preach Jesus Christ. As for all the bits and pieces that go on between, like went on in our faith, we were told this, we were told that, you were going to go to hell, you do this, you couldn't. I was only thinking, funny enough, yesterday, do you remember the day when a woman couldn't, if a woman wore trousers on the sanctuary in the church, Our Lady would cry? You know, the stuff we were handed.
Nonsense.
No, yeah, exactly.
Nonsense.
But I mean, God has given us a mind of our own to decipher what's right, what's wrong, what's good. And all I can say is, I've even entertained Jehovah Witnesses, Joe.
Okay.
I listen to them, hear what they have to say.
But are you, Betty?
Yeah?
You're not going to join.
No.
So are you wasting their time?
They
could be knocking, like Ben said, which is incredible perseverance. They could knock on 1,000 doors before they get one over the threshold.
Well, I'm the oddball, Joe.
You're the one. I know you're one in a million, Betty. You're not one in a thousand. Ben, where does Jesus Christ stand in your church?
Yeah, well, hopefully, as the name implies, he's right at the centre of it all. One of the primary differences that we believe that is different from most Christian faiths in the world is that we believe God the Father, His Son Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit are actually three separate individual beings, and together they make up the Godhead, but they're separate individuals. And so that's one of the differences.
That's the actual teaching of the Catholic faith.
Yeah, but they would see them as one person, that the God, the Father, and the Spirit are the
same. We see them as two. We see, as St. Patrick put it, look at the shamrock, three leaves on one stem, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, all individual. The Father, the Son died for humanity, and the Holy Spirit inspires us, teaches us, helps us to think, makes us think for ourselves, you know? And you can't.
Exactly,
nobody else can tell you what to believe. Jesus Christ is Lord, and that's all that matters, as far as I am concerned. But I will listen to anybody else who preaches Jesus Christ is Lord.
But Ben, can I excuse my rudeness? Were you born into the church?
I was 2 years old, so my parents had myself as a two-year-old and a little six-month-old brother of mine. And then my father was in his 20s, lived in Finglas at the time. It was a Catholic, went to church all his life as a Catholic. But then obviously when he had a young family, and he didn't know a lot about religion. He decided to go to the priest and ask some questions, and a couple of other people, Jehovah's Witnesses, a couple of other people, and knocked on the door. And then, as has it, two of the missionaries happened to knock at his door in Finglas.
Okay.
And he had them in, listened to them, and after a couple of weeks, he decided to join.
Okay. Have you ever seen that, Ben, talking about Finglas and knocking on your hall door, have you ever seen the section in Mrs. Brown's Boys where in our house in Finglas when two members of your church knock on our door?
I did indeed. It was very funny.
Very funny. We'll try and dig it out, because it is very funny. But it's as you say, it happened to you in Finglas, but it was a different experience. That Mrs. Brown tried to get the better of them, but she didn't in the end. Sarko Highland, Sarko, good afternoon.
Hi Joe, how's it going?
You lived in Kansas in the Bible Belt for 15 years.
That's correct.
What does the Bible Belt mean?
Well, it's a large part of Midwestern United States where there is a majority of predominantly what we call right-wing Christians and individuals of a very kind of regulated, institutionalized take on Christianity to the point where it kind of overrides some democratic principles, I would suggest.
Hello?
Hello?
No, that's just Betty. She's answering the hall door, isn't he?
Sorry.
No worries. So are you of a religious bent, Sarka?
I think that's why I wanted to call in, Joe, is that this line isn't being drawn between being religious and being spiritual. And I think it's a very important line to draw in this conversation. So I wouldn't call myself of a religious bent, but I definitely have a spiritual practice. Definitely think spirituality is fundamental to my identity and also to our culture here in Ireland.
Okay. And when you lived in Kansas, in the Bible Belt, as you call it, was that an experience where different churches would knock on your hall door and ask to speak to you?
Yes, that would definitely happen quite regularly. In fact, the Mormon Church primarily, they had a lot of younger people who were trained and kind of organized to do that, and they would gather on the streets and pray and hand out books and use loudspeakers. And it happens down here in Wexford Town. There's individuals who kind of evangelize in public, which, you know, I think they have the freedom and the right to do that.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
But I just wonder what happens in this day. You know, in the world we now live in, Sarka, where people are sometimes wary of strangers knocking on your hall door. And indeed, sometimes strangers would not know what parts of the North Strand doesn't. And North Strand's a beautiful area and great community there between Ballybock and North Strand in the last few years. And winner of the Tidy Towns coming up soon. They do such a brilliant job. But that's neither here nor there. But like there's parts of Dublin, as we well know, where I don't know if people would knock on doors, be it businesses, shops or apartments, but they still do.
That makes sense. I get that, yeah, that makes sense. And like in this part of the United States that I'm talking about, you know, the legalization of hand carrying of weapons has already occurred. You can carry a gun wherever you want to go, even onto a university campus, and that would be a definitely a right-wing and kind of Republican / extreme Christian right position to be able to carry a gun. So like that, but I think that's the question here to me is really about the value of having a spiritual practice. And why I wanted to talk to you was to again draw that line between religion
and where is your spirituality embedded, Sarka?
Well, to be totally honest, today, this week, and in the last couple of weeks, it's embedded in the life, the work, the words, the lyrics, the songs, and the heart of Sinead O'Connor, who I believe was really the heart and soul of the island before we realized it, and struggled immensely with this kind of challenge to find a practice, to find a spiritual, ethical, moral code in the midst of a religion that had been institutionalized to its detriment and become something evil in certain places. And that's where I think we need to keep talking about how important churches are, how important talking about faith
is. But Sinead died, and her obsequies were she died a Muslim.
I think she died with a very strong conviction in what she called the Holy Spirit, and she sought for that spirit in every space she could find it, whether it was in the words and work of Rastafarian Bob Marley, or whether it was initially in Catholicism when she talks about her childhood and praying to the Virgin Mary, or the BVM, as she commonly referred to her. And then she sought it in other areas in her art.
But she did. No, but she did die a Muslim.
And so what? You know, like that was her
religion. Because I'm thinking back, and it was a tweet that Father Tony Flannery. I don't know whether you know Tony. He was he'd be a well known figure in that he got into trouble with the Vatican because he believes in women priests, and he stated, and now is an opportune time to say it, now that the funeral has taken place, but he said it's a great pity that Sinead, the two religions she took up with were one, the Tridentine element of the Catholic Church, who are very anti-women in terms of letting any roles for women in their church, and the Muslim community, which he said oppresses women. So it is a difficult one, isn't it?
It is a difficult one, but I still think she was seeking a pathway to something that enabled her to practice her faith in a way, or just her belief system in a way that kind of helped her keep exploring different avenues, and I think these stereotypes of Islam and these stereotypes of the Christian faith only really come into play when institutions kick in and things like sexism and patriarchy and systemic issues kick in. When you peel back the faith again to its spiritual roots, you know, Jesus, through the merchants out of the temple, he honoured his mother as a woman. He asked us to do that. In the Islamic faith, some of the most liberated individuals and spaces I've ever encountered, of having travelled to Morocco, for example, for a few times, and having like Muslim people in my own family, you know, some of the most liberated women I've ever met.
Yeah, but at Muslim funerals in the mosque, men are on one side and women are on the other.
That doesn't necessarily mean the women are oppressed, you know, so I just think, again, you've got to be careful with stereotypes. And sure,
my point is, you're saying which about Bob Marley but Sinead, God rest her, obviously specified that her funeral should be in the Muslim tradition.
Well, if you were there, Joe, you would have witnessed what all of us who were there witnessed, which is...
I take that. Of course, everyone was deeply moved.
Let me finish.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. First of all, the funeral began with a celebration of Sinead's own work, her life, her music, which in itself speaks volumes to what a spiritual individual she was. And I would go so far as to say, as many others, including Democracy Now! In the United States, have said, she was considered almost a prophet in some regards, if you really go deep into her lyrics.
But in fairness, the event began with her
music, and then after witnessing and listening together to her music outside of her former home in Bray, all of us waited for the hearse to arrive, and it arrived with playing the music of Bob Marley. So then there was that tradition, and then it moved on and left the village of Bray, or the town of Bray, and moved, like a traditional Irish funeral, Catholic funeral, moved on to the private.
I think it was
multi-denominational.
I take that point, and there wasn't a person in the country that wasn't deeply moved, one, by the way the family organised it, so with such dignity, and two, the way they shared it with such dignity as well, in terms of that processing through Bray, and it was deeply, deeply moving. Mick is in Galway. Mick, who knocked at your door last week?
Well, last week, it used to be the Jehovah's Witnesses when I lived in Dublin, but last week it was, the Mormons, I should say, sorry, the Mormons when I was in Dublin, but it was Jehovah's Witnesses last week. And they call, you know, maybe a couple of years might go by and they'll call again, they cover the area. But But I always invite in whoever, when I was in Dublin, the Mormons and the Jehovah Witnesses.
Okay. Do you ask them questions or do they ask you questions?
I ask them questions, and I make it clear to them that I'm, you know, that I was, like most people in Ireland, nearly 100% Catholic, you know, and that I'm non-religious now. And, you know, and I would say to them, you know, I don't want to waste your time, you know, but, you know, I'm not likely to change. But they, you know, they will try and persuade you, but with the Jehovah's Witnesses, they would have no hope, because as I said to them, I keep saying to them, I spent over a year of my life in hospitals, 6 months in 1965, 4 months in Blanchardstown. So I've had blood transfusions, and of course that's a no-no with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
And that's how most people would be aware of the Jehovah Witness from court cases where the state, and it's not just here, it's the state are trying to intervene to give a child a blood transfusion, a life-saving blood transfusion, but the parents, because they're members. But that doesn't exist in the Church of Latter-day Saints, does it, Ben?
No. It doesn't at all. There's no restriction on that. Just recently myself, about 10 weeks ago, was in and actually had a kidney transplant.
Oh,
it was quite good. They were able to take care of me and do all those bits and pieces.
Oh, congratulations, Ben. How long were you waiting?
3 years. 3 years on dialysis. Wonderful service here in Ireland, I must admit.
That's brilliant. Where were you in Beaumont?
I was in a clinic out on the Malahide Road. Dialysis clinic, which is a subsidiary from the Manor Hospital.
Okay, and where did you do the transplant?
Beaumont. Yeah, Beaumont.
Oh, man, brilliant. Oh, congratulations. And how are you doing, Ben?
Doing grand. So I'm doing a little bit of work now, back on my feet, doing a few bits and pieces. I'm just delighted with everything and very, very helpful.
Oh, that's magic. That's such good news. Ben, can I ask you, was it an anonymous donor or relative?
Yeah, unfortunately, an anonymous deceased donor. And my sister is on dialysis as well. It's a hereditary in the family. She actually got the call the same night. The two of us ended up in together.
Did both of you get a kidney transplant on the same day, so to speak, or the same night?
No, unfortunately, of the two kidneys, only one was viable, so my sister's back on. But she took it very well. She was talking to the man up above, and he told her to come soon, so she's happy with that.
Okay. And that's a reminder, if you already have not ticked your driving licence or don't have an organ donor card or haven't told your relatives, if God forbid anything happened, and if it was possible, please give my kidney, whatever the medics are able to give, please give my kidneys, my heart or my liver or whatever, lungs, to people who need it, if God forbid ever anything happened. And the other thing as well, if you want an organ donor card, this is from memory, you text the word donor to 5,500. I'll get the actual 500. It's 500, and they'll come back to you immediately looking for details. But please carry your donor card. Okay, Ben, I want to lighten it up for a minute if I can. You said you liked the Mrs. Brown's Boys skit on when the two, as you said, you lived in Finglas, but when the two lads from the Church of Latter-day Saints knocked on Mrs. Brown's Boys' house in James Larkin Court, Suev James Larkin Court in Finglas, and she tried to get the better of them. Now, typical, you'll remember this, Ben, typical Agnes Brown, the language is a bit fruity, but this is her. Imagine the two lads from the Church of Latter-day Saints in their shirt and tie are now sitting on the couch in Mrs. Brown's house, and she's trying to get the better of them.
A lot of the Bible is made up. They had to, because otherwise it'd be only a pamphlet.
I don't think so.
Norman's Ark, that's made up.
No, I believe his name was Noah.
Well, I believe in Ireland, we call him Norman. That's made up, love.
No, ma'am.
Yes, son, think about it. Think about it.
I have, ma'am.
Son, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights.
That's right,
and they call it a disaster.
Yes, ma'am.
In Ireland, we call that the feckin' summer. It's made up. I mean, here, what did he have on his boat? Norman, what did Norman have? Are you looking up the feckin' answers?
I'm sorry.
What did he have on his boat? I'll give you a hint. He had green alligators and long necked geese, accompanied by camels and chimpanzees. Catch your rats and evidence. Lordy just couldn't find him a unicorn. Come on, what did he have on the boat?
Two of every animal.
Two of every animal in the whole world.
That's right.
On a f***ing boat. Son, we had two hamsters for the month and nearly shit out the house.
You better be going now.
No, wait. Hold on. I'm not fucking finished. The three wise men. Wise. They got fucking lost.
Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. We're talking again a foot of something that happened in North Strand this morning, and that was two members of the Church of the Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, Mormons, referred to by most people, were going door to door, and I'm sure they got a lovely reception, but some people were baffled that it's still happening now. John Shields, John, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks. You were born a Catholic.
That's correct.
But you're now a member of the Church of Latter-day Saints. So when did the conversion come?
Roughly 7 years ago, Joe.
Okay. And why? How did that happen?
I was actually working. I live in Galway, but I was working away from home, above in Belfast.
Okay.
And I was working away from home for 2 weeks at a time, and I met missionaries on the street, and I spoke to them for no more than 2 minutes, Joe. But what they said, I guess, planted a seed.
Yeah.
And it was on my mind for a number of nights, and the next time I went home to Galway then, two weekends later, I went home to Galway and I made it my business to find out if there was a local branch or a local church.
Okay.
And there is a small branch in Galway, and I visited it, and yeah, that was the beginning of the conversion.
And to you, what is the difference between the church you were born into, and you'd no choice, obviously, the Catholic Church, and the church that you've decided to join, the Church of Latter-day Saints?
The difference is, I guess, your service to the Lord and to the community here on earth. I think that's the difference to me.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, did you have to do the evangelical work, John? Did you have to go door to door?
No, I haven't done. I haven't been on a mission, so
okay.
I haven't done it. Now that doesn't mean I won't go on a mission. I mean, we would plan to go on a mission, myself and my wife, when we retire.
Okay.
So that might be normal across, you know, people that retire in the church if they haven't done a mission before.
And would you see yourself doing a mission, John, as was seen is happening in Dublin today? I'm sure other parts of the country as well. Where you would knock on doors, or where you would stand on a street and try and converse with people?
Look, I wouldn't rule it out, Joe. I guess when you go on a mission, you're taught, and I guess there's different things for different ages of people. Let's not forget, I guess, when you get to retirement age,
yeah,
you wouldn't be as physically able,
yeah, that's true, yeah,
as the young missionaries who are, yeah, generally 19, etc. But certainly, you know, it's part of your calling, and that's what you're asked to do. Mm-hmm. I would have no qualms in doing it.
But did, John, you mentioned your wife, did both of you convert at the same time?
No, so I converted first.
Okay.
Actually, my wife was an atheist. She was born in China.
Okay.
So she had no religion, and she actually had no understanding of religion whatsoever. So there was an elderly missionary couple serving in the Galway area at the time, And as I was working away from home, I asked the elderly missionary couple, would they mind, you know, popping in to see my wife, seeing if she okay, etc. They became friends, and then they asked me, would it be okay if they taught my wife the gospel?
Okay.
And over a period of 3 to 6 months, they taught her the gospel.
And that's how it,
yeah,
how it began.
That's correct.
But you do see it as part of your calling that you would go on a mission, John.
Oh, 100%, yeah. Okay. I would expect, you know, if I live to that age, that would be part of my life at some stage.
And did you ever think, go back, I don't know what age you are, but go back 20 years, say, did you ever think this would be part of your life, that you would be going, being evangelical about trying to encourage, you're trying to encourage people to join your church, aren't you?
Look, I guess I was a raving lunatic in my 20s.
Okay, Joe, okay.
I had religion definitely wasn't at the forefront of my daily life. However, I had a strong religious upbringing. I was an altar boy for many years during my younger life. I guess I would have pondered at some stage as a young man whether even I would have been a priest. You know, I would have thought about
okay,
that
yeah.
a young enough age. Now, I dismissed it very soon when I got to about 15. But there were times as an altar boy you'd wonder, you know, will you one day become a priest? But no, if you go back 20 years or if you even go back 10 years, I wouldn't have I've guessed that you know, I would have joined the church and be, you know, open to this
calling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, John. Ben, before we finish, Ben, the number of people now who were overjoyed with your news, which was almost an aside there, because I know that's not the reason you were on about your kidney transplant, and wishing you well. People who know you and people who just know you through the radio here, wishing you well, and especially wishing your sister well, and also anyone else waiting on a kidney transplant. By the way, that number, you just text the word donor to 550. Simplest text number in the world, 550, and that's how you get your organ donor card. Ben, how do you? I know you, as a lot of people, they thought the Mrs. Brown's thing was funny about the Mormons, but yeah. What about the Book of Mormon, which has been on in Dublin? That stage show.
Yeah. They almost say that no publicity is bad publicity, so they show the church in quite a jokingly and laughing way. But nevertheless, it does make people aware that our faith does have an additional book of scripture, which is called the Book of Mormon, another witness of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So we believe the Bible witnesses that Jesus Christ lived on the earth, and the Book of Mormon also witnesses. And so while it is derogatory towards the church in many ways...
Yeah, it is.
You know, it is what it is. We don't fight them or legally have battles with them. We accept it for what it is. And for the few people who go, we've actually literally had people who've seen it and said, why is this religion getting so much negative publicity?
Okay.
And end up joining it.
Okay,
so
your line is deteriorating on me. But Ben, if it was on the Borgosh, if it came back to the Borgosh in Dublin, would you give out leaflets outside?
Occasionally they do. I know that the church have done that when it was in London, so you certainly would give it out and let people look at another side of the story.
Where your members were this morning isn't too far from the poor gosh, anyway. But Ben, I wish you well. Say, Jerry Donnelly. Jerry, you go door to door. What religion are you?
I do.
What religion are you being evangelical for or evangelising?
I'm a Roman Catholic myself, but I don't evangelize for any particular religion, because I promote the grace before meal prayer, which is common to all religions.
Okay.
I do state that I am Roman Catholic myself.
So you knock. So you knock on the door, Jerry.
I knock on the door.
I come out to the door and I say hello, good afternoon. You say.
I said, "Hi, my name is Jerry Donnelly. I come from Rolla, just up the road. I'm not here to sell you anything.
Okay.
I am promoting the Grace Before Meal Prayer as a way of uniting the family either once a day or maybe once a week. Or if a family have people in nursing homes or in hospitals, it's a nice way to keep in touch with them because we all have to eat, Joe.
Okay, well done for knocking on. What do you want me to do, Jerry? You want me to say it every evening?
If a person prays three times a day, they will have come into contact with God 1,000 times a year more often than they would if they hadn't.
And what reaction do you get, Jerry?
Generally fairly good. Either we already say it, and that's fine. It's said as grand. I'm religious, but I don't pray.
Okay.
Or I've gone away from Mass. I'm a Catholic, but I don't go to church anymore. And I say, well, you know, why? Any particular reason? You know, is something personal. So it's just a way of getting people to talk about it.
Okay, would people say to you, mind your own business?
Nobody has really said that to me, I'm just not interested, thanks very much.
Would you get people
calling,
saying I'm sick, sore and tired of the Catholic Church and all the scandals?
Oh, yes,
And how do you say that to you, okay, Jerry, I'm not taking anything to do with the Catholic Church because I'm sick, sore and tired of the Catholic Church and all the scandals. Yeah. How do you respond to that?
I'd say, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Is it something that happened to you personally or is it just the general scandals? And more than likely, they say it's the general scandals. And I try and say that, well, you know, it's a human church and, you know, all churches have, you know, bad things happening. And, you know, I just try and loosen things out. But a lot of reaction, I guess. They say, oh, yes, I have somebody in hospital.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we get to talk about, you know, what's wrong with them and, you know, and try and support them, try and encourage them.
And many hall doors would you knock on a day?
I stand here, researcher. I only go out for half an hour a day.
Okay.
I'd knock on in about 50 doors.
Okay.
And I might give out about 5 to 7 cards.
Do you go out every day?
Pretty much every day, unless I've got something pressing.
Yeah, and Jerry, when did you start
I've done all the area, and I started doing this about 4 years ago. I've covered all of the Clondalkin area, and now I'm going into your territory.
It's a Ballyfermot, yeah. And
my parish has transferred to Ballyfermot now.
And why?
Why
did you start doing it, Jerry?
Because I was having a get-together. My name is Donnelly, and we had a Donnelly get-together just this year, but we have them every 5 years. I was aware that we're all we've all different faiths throughout the family, and some none, some of different religions, some other Christians, and some Catholic. So I was trying to think of something that would unite us all, and this is what I came up with, you know. And
And have you any recognition?
It's been well received.
I hear you saying that, which of course it's true. But Jerry, have you had any recognition from the Catholic Church? Or any church, for that matter?
Well, I didn't. Well, I did actually. I sent a letter to the Archbishop in the north. Armagh.
Yeah,
and he circulated it to all the bishops in the country, and approval mightn't be the best word to use, but acknowledgement that it was something good.
And that's Eamon Martin, the Primate of all Ireland, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
Said, okay.
That's right.
Yeah. And you found them, as I think a lot of people do, extraordinarily civil and open to your suggestion.
Well, I wouldn't have been talking to him personally.
I know that. But he didn't.
I got a reply.
Yeah, and you got a reply, and the reply.
And I was very thankful for that.
Okay, so, Jerry, what is the prayer that you say unites Jewish, Christian, people who follow Buddha, relate to all religions?
What's the grace before meals? Say it for me. Well, the Catholic version is, bless us, O Lord, as we sit together, bless the food we eat today, bless the hands that made the food, and bless us, O Lord. Amen.
Okay.
Now, the Muslims obviously have a different, an Old Testament version of it, and so do humanists.
What version do you have on your card? That you give out?
I have four versions.
Okay.
I have a lovely one on the back of it, and it says, bless the food before us, the family beside us, and the love between us. And I think
that's the food before us, the family beside us, and the love between us. Well said. Well said. So, Jerry,
came from my daughter, by the way.
Well done. Brilliant. And that's lovely. Have you been out today?
Not yet, no. No, I may not be going out today. Because,
well, you've done good work here. You've knocked on a few doors here, Jerry. And will you go out, hail, rain, or shine?
No, because my mode of transport is a bicycle.
Okay. You're brilliant.
So okay. If it's raining, I get my clothes destroyed. So,
okay.
Bless the food.
We'll say it together. Bless the food before us.
Before us.
The family beside us and the love between us. Well said. Well said. Yeah. Okay, Jerry, go safely.
And that applies to everybody.
And also to all our other callers as well. Thanks indeed, yeah. Jerry Donnelly in Clondalkin.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Before I go back to the documentary that we've been talking about since the beginning of the week, Deepest Breath, and the incredible work of Stephen Keane, I should mention another documentary that's having its premiere tomorrow evening. RT are involved in making it, produced and directed by Jerry Gregg, David Blake Knox. Again, both of them formerly of this parish, was involved in the writing of it. And it's based on the story of Thomas Niedermayer. Now, my interest in this began 10 years ago on this very programme, because we had a caller. We were talking about the bullets that never stopped travelling and the effect of the Troubles, and someone said, does anyone remember Thomas Niedermayer, the German industrialist? He ran Grundig in Belfast, who was kidnapped and murdered. And that person just said, you should look into... I knew his wife, because that was in the public domain. And myself and Kieran Cassidy, who was on Liveline at the time, we made a documentary. It's up on the website. It's called A Knock on the Door, about the tragedy of the Niedermayers. They were murdered by the IRA. There was a whole... was a hostage situation, and there was demands being made. But the whole family and the effect, the subsequent effect, and that was called A Knock on the Door, and that's a radio documentary, and it's up on the Doc on One, that wonderful website. But there's the new TV documentary is being launched tomorrow night in the Irish Film Institute, and that's called Face Down. Now, I've seen it. It's about 90 minutes long. It is searingly powerful. And again, as a reminder of the power of television and images, and it tells the story in obviously a much greater detail. And I'm sure it's going to get it, because the Film Board were involved, RTE were involved, and I'm sure it's going to get an outing. But the lesson of that documentary is that bullets and that are fired from a gun in any shape or form just simply never stop travelling. That's called Face Down, and it gets a very, very powerful and positive review from Donald Clark today in the Irish Times. But the other documentary we began talking about, again, had a tragedy to it, unfortunately. Stephen Keenan, the Irishman who was a rescued free diver, but was also a safety diver, and he died as he was helping another free diver, Alessia Cicchini, and she survived, and he died. And there was a lot of debate, a lot of incredible admiration for Stephen. People who knew him and people knew of him. And then that got us into talking about adventurers. And yesterday we had Mick O'Shea on, who's done lots of things. And they were trying to explain why they take on these incredible challenges. Now, another man who's in the middle of a challenge, well, it's suspended for the time being, is Martin McMahon. Martin, good afternoon. I think you're on a good line.
Hello, Joe.
Where are you now, Martin?
I'm in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia.
In Mongolia. And tell us about the race that you are, well, it's cut short for one reason, but the race, that the challenge, the almost inhuman challenge that you've taken up.
Yeah, it's called the Mongol Derby. Okay. It's a 1,000-kilometre horse race. So it's run over 11 days. You race for 12 hours per day for 10 days. And it's on semi-feral horses.
The line's a little bit fuzzy. A semi-feral horse. You don't know the horse before you arrive.
No one ever see the horse before. He's not fully trained, if you like. They're not nice, quiet horses like we know in Ireland, you know.
Okay. So it's 1,000 miles.
And you race each one of those. Yeah. 1,000 kilometres.
Oh, kilometres. And is it a race?
It's an adventure number one and a race number two.
Okay, an adventure.
Everybody wants to win it, like, yeah.
Okay.
There isn't any prize for winning it or anything like that. It's just the glory of doing it, the thrill of doing it or whatever.
And how long would you be on this semi-feral horse, which you've only just met, each day?
You do about 30 kilometres on each horse, and then you change and you get on another one. You do about another 30 kilometres, roughly.
So for how many hours would you be on a horse each day?
Well, you can race for 12 hours, so you'd be on there 10 hours anyway, you know.
And what about food and accommodation and water and?
You eat the local food at the horse stations. When you change over, you can get some food there, and water, and you get electrolytes. You fill up your electrolytes. You have a hydration pack with you, and you have electrolytes and water. You know, you'd be drinking maybe about 2 to 3 liters of water during each stint, you know.
So
it's very warm outside. Like temperature could be up to 35 degrees, or it could be cool. It could be anything, you know. The weather, they get all weather.
And
you can get four seasons in one day here.
Yeah. Yeah, is it dangerous, Martin?
Oh well, it is. Yeah, yeah, there is danger involved, I suppose. Yeah.
And what happened What happened to you when disaster struck?
Yeah, it was going good. I fell off the horse. I got booked off, and I broke my scapula under my right shoulder.
Oh.
But it's a high attrition race. So yeah, just a good lot of lads can fall out. You know, there's about 10% maybe of the riders, the staff maybe wouldn't finish for one reason or another. You know, they might get sick or whatever.
Well, it's because you're as you say, you're going. It's called the Mongol Derby. And Martin, you say why? Why did you do it?
It's just I love the format of that race because it's endurance on steroids, and it's the different horses. You get to ride about around 30 different horses between the horses you race on, and there's a few horses before you go racing just to get used to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all different types. Every one of them are different. So you got that, and you got the heat, and you got all the different variables. You know, you can't actually quantify it. There's so much, like.
Yeah. Have you done it before?
No.
Have you done anything like this before? Like Mick O'Shea, Mike O'Shea yesterday on the programme. He did, he's attempted the North Pole twice. He's done Tom Green, the South Pole. He's climbed K2. He's freed. Anyway, have you? But he's a list of different things. He's pushed himself to do.
Yeah. No, this was my first attempt at anything like this. I learned a lot of lessons. Now I must say,
such as wiser men today.
Preparation and how to prepare for it and stuff like that. You know, even though I had a lot of preparation done, and I had a lot of research done, but having said that, if I had my day back again, I do extra stuff. You know.
But how long were you preparing for this Mongol Derby?
About 18 months or less. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And could I take this opportunity to thank all of my great friends?
Yeah, of course.
Who helped me with fundraisers and all the rest of it, and to the people, that great people that let me ride their horses to get some practice in. John O'Grady carriages in 6 Mile Bridges gave me great help, and Michael McDonough let me ride his beautiful race horses, and Jim Arthur, my great friend, let me ride some of his horses also.
Well done.
EI Electronics in Shannon gave me the great sponsors as well.
Great company that makes Smokeland. Brilliant company, always. And Martin, would you do it again? Would you try it again?
I'd love to do it. I would, I'd love to go back and do it again, but I'd have to get the dust settled after this one and see what happens, you know?
And are you in hospital now?
No, I'm out of hospital now. I'm back in the hotel room, but I have to meet the doctor tomorrow now to get a certificate to fly.
Oh,
just to make sure that.
And are you in any pain, Martin?
No, not really. No.
Okay.
Pride is hurting more than anything else, I suppose.
Your what? Your ego.
I suppose the pride is hurting more than anything else. Okay.
How was the feral horse that booked you?
Oh, there's no fear of him. He's in fine health, thank God. Yeah. They're great horses. I tell you, these horses are brilliant.
Okay. Horses. You're in Ulaanbaatar, so you're the furthest away caller today. It's between you and Clondalkin at this stage, and North Strand. Okay, safe home, Martin. It's a magnificent achievement. I think people read. There's an article, brilliant article, in the Irish Times by Rory Fleming about the endurance and what you have to go through. But it's great to hear your voice. And safe home, Martin. And will you take a little rest in the sunny southeast? When you come home in your native Wexford.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Thanks indeed. That's Martin McMahon, as he describes himself, an adventurer.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And as I say, that documentary, which is on the radio, the Doc on One website, which if you're on holidays, which I was recently, you can spend days listening to those incredible documents. Doc on One, it's an app, and you will find that documentary, Knock on the Door. And then if you get a chance to see this incredibly powerful TV documentary made by Jerry Gregg and David Blake Knox called Face Down, which is about the story of the tragedy of Thomas Niedermayer and his family, Ashlyn Gruffrey was on sound, the BCO's Leon Dunn, and the producer was Nadine Maloney. And Ciara King is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.